stop persistence as our history is real. A strong will can shine like gold.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett. This is episode 58, and we'd like to thank Matt Mullins and Bring Downs for our intro music. And these guys play a lot of Appalachian rock, and they're really talented people, and I want to thank them for that. Also, we have a couple t-shirts we want to give away. If you check in on Facebook on episode 58, and like us, we'll put your name in a hat and have a drawing on April the 1st. This is not Fool's Day, but we are going to give out a couple podcast t-shirts. And so get your name there, episode 58, and like us. And glad to hear from you. Our guest today is a friend of mine. He's done a lot of different things. He's been a coal miner. He's worked in the real estate. He's been a volunteer. He's been a coach. Elite golfer and done quite a bit of stuff. But Mr. Phil Honaker, glad to have you, Phil.
Thanks, Wayne.
You grew up in the 50s and 60s around Beckley. Tell us a little bit about your growing up.
Well, growing up, I had a big family. Started off in the little town I grew up in, like a one-room school, and then went to Trap Hill for a couple of weeks, and our house burned down, and we moved to the Harper Road area. Stayed there a little while, went to Mount Tabor Elementary School, went there, and then it's no longer there. It's part of the Briar Patch complex. Went to Skelton, lived there a few years, and then my dad bought a little farm in Prosperity, and that's where I mostly grew up. That's where my high school years lived, in Prosperity.
Did you go to Cranberry School?
Went to Cranberry School, yes. Then, Wayne, you go there to the eighth grade. And that's what all the elementary schools, and then went to ninth grade at Beckley Junior High.
What did your dad work in the mines, or he said he had a farm?
Well, we had a big family. He did, the miners back then in the late 40s would get maybe $1 a day or $2 a day, and he decides he couldn't feed everybody, although we did raise crops, and you had to grow a lot of your food. He went to the New River Coal Company, and they have at that time 70,000 acres, 30,000 acres in Raleigh County, and 40 in Fayette County, and he got the lease to start his own mines, and they were referred to as like punch miners, and so he started there. You literally had to mine the coal, and you actually take it to the prep plants, you sold all your coal back to New River Company, so to speak. So, And it was pretty common. Lots of people that did that.
Yeah, there was a neighbor of mine, Reverend Billy Waddell, used to do that. I think the mines he worked was out around Gray Flats somewhere, around where the soccer field are, and he had ponies that he had worked in.
Right, they did. Used ponies to pull the coal out of the mines.
And how long did your dad do this?
He did that. They had a new Health and Safety Act that went in effect in 1970, and requiring that all mining equipment be what they call permissible. In other words, explosion proof with methane gas. And so he would have to re-equip everything. And so it was time for him to get out of the business, along with a lot of other people.
Did you play any organized sports or anything like that when you were growing up?
Most of my organized sports was on Saturdays. We went over to the mine site and to get prep everything for the miners when they come back to work on Monday. But I didn't particularly look forward to Saturdays for, that was one of the reasons, because we knew what our Saturdays would be like. Well, I had chores to do.
How many boys you got in the family?
I have three sisters and four brothers. I was kind of in the middle.
How many of them went into the mines, worked in
it,
the mines?
Wayne, it's kind of like what was out there. You know, it was a mining community, and we learned everything about every aspect about mining, you know, with our dad. And if when I was a kid, I mean, if I grabbed an old mine lamp and went crawl around into mines, he wouldn't hardly say anything to me. But it was different. We ended up most of us in the mining industry, you know. And one of my younger brothers, he was an electrical engineer, and he worked for Peabody. But a lot of us did end up doing the mine work. And now that's getting less and less now in the mining industry.
As you're growing up there, what did you do besides working on helping your dad on the weekends? What kind of recreation were you involved
with? When we lived in Skelton, I got to know all the guys there, and we made up our own games. We'd climb up in trees and swing from one tree to the other. We were careful not to the kind of trees we get, and we knew which ones the limbs would fall out on, so we did. We had stuff to do, and one summer there, where everybody built their own little stilts, and we'd walk on stilts down in the road, and then one summer we would get old big 50-gallon barrels and walk down on them, and we kept busy when I lived there in the Skelton area.
Were one of the Skelton Skulls.
That was the term we used. We created the Skelton Skulls, yes.
It's funny how they had a lot of the neighborhoods. There was the Raleigh Rangers, the Skelton Skulls, and the neighborhood I grew up in, we gave ourselves the name. We called ourselves the Clow Street Pansies, and that was our choice. But every neighborhood had a name. I can remember the Skelton. They used to have the tipple there and had the smokeless coal. You went underneath the belt, I guess, when you went out towards Skelton, which was Valley Drive at that time. And then you had the Gulf Station there in the V.
It was in right in the V there, yes.
Did the New River own that Gulf Station?
I want to think yes. I'm sorry I don't have that answer, but I want to think yes. You know, when we moved there, all the little communities had their company stores. And there was one right there where the car dealer is right now, a car dealership, and the old filling station. That was a place we would hang out, and you could go up there and buy a bottle of pop for a nickel, and it was okay. So,
where was the Skelton Mines at?
It was they had the old prep plant was right there in Skelton. Right the area where the old craft shop there, it was in that area, and he had an old overpass there, and they underground the Stanford mines would belt their the coal over to Skelton, and when they had the Stanford mines open, and then they would remember where they had the old big old lift to go up there and dump the slate out. I don't know if you recall those days or not, but they had an old big tower up there, and they dumped the slate out on a big pile up to where the church is now.
Yeah. So when you got into high school, you hadn't played any organized sports or anything, but you went out for wrestling.
I did go out for wrestling, and when it was Park Junior High, they let us know that Coach Pilish would let ninth graders come over. You couldn't make the team, but you come over and work out with the wrestlers.
And so you were in the class of 65 at Woodrow.
Yes.
And that was, they won state basketball championship.
They did,
there.
Yes.
And there were some guys in that class, Ron Kyle and Fred Lewis and Bill Stone. Yes. There was some pretty good athletes.
Well, I got to know Bill there as much as anywhere else, you know, and he worked with you. Uh-huh. So, yes.
But that was a pretty athletic bunch at that time, and a lot of people forgot about them. They remembered the 62 team that went undefeated, and then they remembered the 67 team that won in Morgantown, but a lot of people forgot that there was a state championship decided there in 65. Now, you remember those places like Tony's Dance Land and all them places when there were you growing up, or where Hobby Lobby is now?
I remember a little place where we would go on the on Sprague Hill, we called it there, and it was a little place we'd hang out on Friday nights, a little teenage-like place, and we look forward to that. You know, when you're in school, your favorite day of the week was like Fridays for some reason or another, and that's where we just hang out there, look forward to Friday nights.
Now, what kind of music or stuff did you listen to?
Most of it you could make out the lyrics, but nowadays with electric guitar and things, now it's a little different to trying to make out the. I don't hear as good as I used to, but my sisters were big into music, and if there was a new recording came out, they would go straight and buy it, you know. So they listened to a lot of music.
And did any particular kind of country or rock or anything they prefer?
Probably not country as much, you know. And then I heard the tune "The Lion Sleeps Tonight." My sister, they played on and on and on. So that's one of them that kind of stuck in my head. And so that's back in the '60s.
Now, when you graduated, what did you do then? What then after graduation?
We went after I graduated. While I was in school, the Deering Brothers, they had an old prototype thing that was literally was building that would put underground telephone cable. Now, I think Mr. Wyatt Rick Wright's father, he was over with CMP Telephone Company, and Jimmy Deering developed this thing, and they brought it to vocational school to weld it up. It's lots of metal and stuff and big long bars and stuff, and it went on the back of a little case bulldozer, and he brought it up there, and myself and Jerry Hickman did all the welding, and he came back later on, and he wanted me to work there while I was in high school, and so they kept me busy doing that, so I was able to make enough money to get an old car, and so I did that there for about a year and a half.
And then is that when you went into the mines, or after?
No, that? I didn't go into the mines until I worked in Virginia a little while. And I worked for Vasilio and Grogan in a little shop called the Welding Shop. And it seemed like every job I had, I was paid $1.99 an hour. And then I heard about a mining opening and wanted to have an interview down at the Clear Creek and started off with $4.05 an hour. And that don't sound like a lot of money. It wasn't any money, but it was 1969. And I started to work there. We pretty much knew what to expect when you go in the mining industry and what has to be done. And it takes everybody's effort. And so I went there. And then the guy that was over the welding shop, he asked me, Dewey Sparks, and he asked me, wanted me to stay there. And I told him, I said, we have the health card when you work at the mines. And I said, we plan to have a family. And so I need that health card. And then the pay was better too. Lots of opportunity for overtime.
Is this one time you met your wife, Glenna, or have you already met her?
We were a year apart in school, and I didn't know her. And I had a little Corvette, and I was circling Pete and Bob's drive-in, and she had a new 68 GTO. And I said something stupid, I think. I said, you want to race that car? And she just rolled the window up on me. So that probably wasn't a good answer. But we got to know her a little after that. Yeah,
I'd like to have them cars now.
Well, that old '67 Corvette. It was a little yellow one, and there was another one. And Freddie Blackburn had one, a yellow one, and he had the big engine. I had a smaller engine in mind, but they were two yellow Corvettes at that time in Beckley.
Was there anybody in school or when you were going to school or early life that you think might have had a greater influence on you, or somebody that might have influenced you, something that helped you along the way or gave you a little push or a good example, maybe?
I went to vocational school, and at that time my dad was still in the mining business, and I thought, my older brother Tommy was an electrician, and he decided he needed a welder, and so I went to vocational school and got my certification there, and there was jobs everywhere for welders then. Everything was built in America back then, so there's lots of jobs available. I think it was 1965 when I told Frank Deering that I was going to go to work at the old FMC Corporation. And it's in Charleston, and these old big buildings there, and they made railroad cars to pull coal. They rebuild old army tanks and put bigger turrets on them and bigger shell, bigger barrel, whatever you call that thing. But and then they also made army personnel carriers and what they call mortar carriers. And they're made out of aluminum. They were a big old thick 2-inch aluminum. They were amphibious. And so that I worked there for a few years.
Well, how'd you end up actually in the mines? I mean, how?
Well, when they closed the FMC Corporation down, that's when I went to Basilio and Grogan.
Oh.
And I stayed there about all of 68, and then I got went to work for Consolidation Coal Company. I started in October of 1969, and I worked there actually until they closed the mines.
It was at Clear Creek.
They call it, yeah, Workman's Creek. I'd go drive over a Spruce Mountain for 25 years, go down the Sam Branch Road or Dry Hill Road then and go over the Windy Mountain.
Were you primarily a welder or what did you do?
I started there my job was called electrician helper. What I liked doing, I liked welding. It was a big part of what I did. I took night classes and got my electrical certification at Beckley College, I guess is what they call it then. And so I was an electrician. And the last job I held was fire boss job. And you do have to have what they call bossing papers to do that job. It's like the unions wanted someone in the union to have to do an inspection of the mines, and so that's what the fire boss would do.
Now I know you've done a lot of volunteer work over the years, and one of the volunteer jobs, of course, you had to pay your dues like everybody else did in Little League, coaching Little League, and we had a team. It was a minor league team, 9 and 10 year olds, and your sons and my son John played on that team, and I was helping. Goose Webb was one of the assistants, and then you were the head coach, and I'd helped some. I was still playing a little bit of softball, and couldn't be there as much as you guys, but you were kind of like the. You carried a backstop in your truck.
I carried all that. I had made my own homemade bases, and I went all in on it. It was fun, and I got to know a lot of the kids. And I heard Coach Barksdale talk about Larry Hickman. And his dad, Jerry, we've been lifelong friends, and Larry was something else. And I don't think you could hit a baseball past him. And he just lived like a vacuum cleaner, and he was a really good kid. He was about the happiest kid I believe I've ever been around. He was the happiest, funniest person that I've ever hang out with, and he was real cool. And he played basketball for Coach Barksdale.
Yeah.
But he was an outstanding baseball player. You couldn't strike him out. You couldn't hit a ball past him. He was a vacuum cleaner there. But he was our shortstop. And back in, I think they had 10 teams, and they had the Eastern Division and Western Division and something. And so we got to play the Bears, and we couldn't beat them. I think they beat us pretty bad one year. And then we lost in the last. I think we lost 2-1. And Greg Daniels, Pat Fragile, and Jim Vaughn. Now, they coached the Bears, and myself, and Ernest Fox, and Gary Webb, and Phil Gerald. He helped us. He was good. They were good thing. Parents all pitched in on it, and we enjoyed it, and we worked hard at it. And
now that was the year before I came.
I think so, yeah.
Because Larry had already moved up then. But the year I helped, you had the, with the backstop and the bases, any flat piece of ground was a potential
anywhere
practice.
Actually I went at it all in, and of course the Bears coach did too. They were good people, and they were it was good competition, and I know the Daniels, Chris, and so we've watched Chris grow up, Chris Daniels, and he's good friends with Keith. They just come back from a golfing trip, and they hang out together. It was fun, and I looked forward to it.
I know one of the things that you did really impressed me. We pitched to every kid. The coaches would take turns because of where the coach is at. Every kid got hit the ball 10 times or whatever in practice. And then every kid on the team, I don't care if it's the best kid or the worst kid, could bunt. No. We taught them all to bunt, and it worked out. It won a couple games, actually, you know, for us. But, I mean, no kid that was on that team could say they didn't get to participate.
Well, actually, the rules required that they all play in the field. And I had 16 players, and we played five innings. And the hardest thing my job was to do was make sure each kid got to bat and then play three outs. And sometimes the parents would, you know, sometimes they didn't understand how it worked, but that's how you had to do it. And it was a lot of fun. My first year I was, when Keith decided he was going to play baseball, I made a little place in my backyard. I kept windows broken out all the time. The community kids would come there, and I'd throw the ball, I'd throw it hard to him. And so he had trouble when he played Little League having to wait to hit it, you know. And so he was ready to play. He was ready to play. And then when I got out there to help Mike McClure. Now, Mike's philosophy on baseball then, I helped him, and he would tell our kids, you know, we don't want you to, I'd rather you strike out than get a walk. That was his kind of, he wanted to score. He said, I don't want any 1-0 games. I want to score 10 points. But he wanted all the kids to hit the ball. Yeah. Mike was a really good person, and he did 1 year, and I think his older son Robbie moved up to Babe Ruth, so I kind of took over the team then.
We got involved in the wrestling up at the Y, and you got your boys involved, and then you started coaching Central Beckley, and the program was growing. I was working at the YMCA and directing wrestling, but we had a lot of conversations over competition, and some of the matches were more exciting than you'd see on the NCAA finals.
That's exactly right.
And some of the parents would really get fired up, and we brought some people in some of the camps and exposed the local kids to some of the right way to do things, but it was growing considerably. And then I left a while, and you actually ran the program after I left, and I don't know how you did it and had a full time.
It was it was actually full time, and it was in October, and Mel Hancock wanted to talk with me, and we had a lot of kids already signed up, and it looked like we were going to have like maybe 6A teams and 6B teams, and I was on the board then, and he said, Phil, we think we should just do away with the wrestling program. We don't have anyone to do it. And at the same time in October, I took a job as a fire boss at the mines, which required you to be there some part of it, 7 days a week, or 7 days, so you had to be there to check the mine ventilation and everything. And which in itself was a handful. You had to, the mine inspectors traveled with you, and a few times, and then you had to fill out all the paperwork of what you found wrong and needed to be corrected. And so it was a little bit stressful. And then I told Mel, I said, no, we're not. And I said, I'll help the program. Wayne can help me when he gets a chance. But it was a handful. It was, yeah. And trying to get, we would go to different elementary schools, and seemed like we maybe you might remember more than I do. It seemed like we'd wrestle maybe 2 days a week, and then you had to find coaches and somebody to call the games, but it was a handful. And then we ended up in '94 we had the old big tournament there. We called it the King of the Hill tournament, and that was just an all day thing. So yeah, that was I bit off more than I could chew, and I was always I'm one of those old people that don't ask people to help me, and if they help me, that's fine. And I leaned on you a lot to get us through it. So,
a lot of people didn't realize the wrestling program. We wrestled we didn't wrestle at the Y like the basketball came and played all their games at the Y. We wrestled at Lincoln Elementary, Maxwell Hill, Staniford, Bradley.
Right.
Anybody
right.
that would let us use the gym. So
right.
it usually involved getting mats there and putting stuff down, and it, just getting ready was a tremendous job, not just showing up and turning the scoreboard on.
Right.
It was a pretty difficult, a little bit more to it. But then you came up and helped me. I was coaching at Park, and I didn't have an assistant coach back then. They didn't pay assistants, didn't allow And that was during that particular time. We had some pretty good teams. We had some. We were getting kids from the Y program, and then we had a few kids that come along that just developed quick.
They did, absolutely.
And we had quite a bit of success with in the bigger tournaments, and were able to be. Things went well for quite a few years.
Sure did, and I look forward. It's a big part of my life and your life, and our sons did okay. They I think 1989 that John, your son John, and my two sons, they all runners up, and so I think we finished fifth in the state that year, and it was fun, and a lot of memories. Getting back to the youth program, when I'm like, how am I going to get this mat, and where we're going to wrestle? And Lester Vault was a godsend. He was like, I'll be ready, I'll help you. And we wrestled down at Bradley a lot. They had their own mat there, and so didn't have to carry a mat around. And he was wonderful. And he would stay around and help clean up everything when we'd finish up. And yes, he was pretty special. He would always be accommodating.
Of course, now the youth wrestling is that was kind of the pioneer days. Now
yes.
it's grown, and that every little community and every area has a pretty good size wrestling team, and you can tell by the success in the high schools. You know, the local high schools have done quite well around here, and I think Independence has won 4 state championships in the past 10 years, and a couple runner-ups. Greenbrier West has done well, and Woodrow Wilson is kind of turning around too. And I think the youth program has paid off tremendously. But a lot of good memories, a lot of interesting things, good and bad. But what we run into. But I will say this: when you helping me, it kind of kept me settled down, because it's nice to have somebody else that's got different thinking. You know, I mean, you got if you got two people that think exactly alike, you don't need one of them. You know, but so you always had the good ideas that maybe I hadn't thought of, and it turned out that we worked out, you know, worked out good.
It did. It was a lot of wonderful years, and I remember sometimes when the kids would mess up a little bit, and you'd get on them a little bit hard, and you'd come over to me and say, I need you to soften that up a little bit, and so I'd go over to the kid and I'd say, now, you know, Coach, you just can't do stuff like that. You know, you're going to get us all in trouble. Well, I'd kind of soften it up.
So, yeah, you got to have the good guy, bad guy.
Yeah. And we worked good. That worked out good for us.
But I think Park still has a few records here and there with the performances in a couple of the bigger tournaments. And so it's nice to win, too. But during this time, I mean, where did you learn to play golf? You picked up golf when you was young. Didn't
actually,
you?
I didn't pick it up when I was young. I called my friends, you know, and that I grew up with, and Larry Hick, Jerry's brother Larry, and I called him and asked him when we wanted to go fishing. We go down the New River and fish, and they had started playing golf around the early 1970, probably 71, and nobody go fishing, and I said, I'll go over there. We went over to that old place over at, what they call it over there then, over at the Cool Ridge area. What did they call it?
The Rock Pile.
Well, they Rock Farm or something, they had names for it. But
Lakeview.
Lakeview, that's right, Lakeview. Unlike the Lakeview in Morgantown, but we played there, and I just went along with them, and kind of got hooked on it. I was just following around to have somebody to talk to, and Jerry Hickman hit a drive on number one. He got a 7-iron out, and he missed a green, and he said, you want to try to hit one? And so he gave me a 7-iron, and I knocked it on the green about 4 foot in the hole, and I thought that was too easy. And I do remember, and this has followed me ever since, I had a little straight uphill 4-foot putt, and I said, the hole's not big enough to make, you know. And so that's kind of been my, I think that when you first time I hit a putt, I thought I couldn't make it, and it's followed me my whole golf time. So I'm not known for a very good putter, so I work on it.
After you got out of the mines, you started selling real estate and did pretty well on that.
I got out, and I could have transferred to another mines, and I thought it would be downgrading. I thought, no, I'm not going to drive farther where I'd have to go somewhere else. And I had 25 years in. And Jerry came up to me. Jerry Zafrodis, he and Kathy were shopping. I got laid off like on the Christmas Eve, and then I ran into him. Now, Jerry was taught Keith and Michael. They were both, he was their driver's head coach, and they both wrestled for Jerry and Rocky. And I ran to him, and he said, and Jerry said, "Hey, Honecker, you teach me how to play golf. I can do some deals out on the golf course, and you might want to dabble in real estate and get you licensed and dabble in real estate." I said, "I'll do more than dabble in it." I said, "I'll that'll be my next career." And so that's how that started. And I went to the classes right at the end. And so I went right in, straight into the business. And a little bit of a challenge also, because people told me I couldn't do that, you know. And Jerry used to refer to my dumb old coal miner. He'd say stuff like that. I was never a dumb old coal miner, but he would refer to that jokingly. It was a good place to work and good folks. And Keith always tells me that that his favorite school teacher was Kathy Zafrodis in the second grade. That was her first assignment, and Keith just thought the world of her. And Miss Moore, that taught with you, Keith thought the world of her, and yeah, she felt that way. I've talked to her when she had grandson Tommy, whose son was, they were going out there and taking over to Coal City at the old Stoco, going to a football clinic, and we'd talk every day. She was a wonderful lady, and I had the COVID thing. I didn't get to go to her services, and I think you told me you lost it or something. But Keith really liked her, and I think you talked close to her, didn't you?
Yeah. I taught right beside of Pam Moore, who we're talking about. And,
right.
She was an excellent teacher and a real good person. But how long were you in the real estate business?
It worked out about 15 years.
Wow.
I just woke up one day and got my broker's license and was kind of considering, you know, going my own way there. And then I realized Kathy and Jerry had a hard day. We're trying to run a business and both teach schools. And it just takes up every minute of every day. And my wife was retiring, and she said, "Let's just both retire." So that's what we decided to do.
Yeah. Have you got any advice for somebody that young, starting out in life? Anything, information or anything that you've learned that you would...
if you get called a workaholic, there's nothing wrong with that. And my two sons, when they were growing up, I had chores I expected them to do, and so it worked out good. And Michael lives real close to, you could almost hit a golf ball where he lives from your house. And he just, I tell him, "Why don't you ever slow down and take a break?" He's always working on something. And Keith's the same way. He's real delicate. He works over at Glade Springs. He's been over there 20 years now, and I'll watch him jump off a cart and go pick up a beer can or cigarette butt or something. So he works hard. I tell people, you know, nobody can tell you how hard to practice. Nobody can tell you how hard to work. And keep a positive attitude. And when you and I coach together, we planned to win. We planned to be successful. We wanted our wrestlers to be successful, and hard work. That's the key about anything.
Well, you remember this quote, "A man prepared has fought half the battle"?
I think that's very good, yes. Yes.
That was a quote that was underneath your high school picture in the yearbook. So you've lived by it. I mean, "A man prepared has fought half the battle." Phil Honecker, what's on your bucket list? What's something out there that you haven't done or you'd like to do or go somewhere?
We talk about that. Glenn and I talk about that. And I said, "Well, we're young and healthy, and the young part's going away quickly. Do you want to go somewhere, travel, or go out west?" And I said, "I don't want to get one day where we can't go and then have regrets." And not particularly. Yeah, just grandkids are everything. I spend all my time. I either talk to them or text them just about every day. And Keith has three daughters, and oldest one's 18. And so we're around them a lot and do things with them and vacation with them also. So it's a lot of fun. I look forward to it.
Yeah, when they're active like that, they keep you busy just trying to...
Keith's girls all do two different sports. And so I think they're going to run track down at Lakely Field. And Chloe wanted to make sure I was going to be there. And she's the oldest one, so... Yeah.
They keep you busy. Well, listen, Phil, our time's about up, buddy. We're gonna have to get you back sometime because we got some stories we could tell that I think we can keep them on the air. But I'd like to share a few stories with the people there. So I'd love to have you back.
Well, we'll try that, and I particularly liked your Bobby Bowling when he talked with Bobby, and then all your the coach we talked to, coach when he was doing basketball, he was wonderful, and actually, when he came to the Y to make his presentation of what he wanted to try to plan and do, he might not know that, but Bob called me the chairperson of the program committee, and when he went to Bob Bowling, he said, "Well, you got to go to make a presentation to the program committee," which was me and Mark Lilly and Becky Aliff. And so, and Bob's attitude, well, I think what Barksdale wants to do would be good for the community and good for the Y. Connie wanted us to, and I was kind of in awe of him anyhow, and I didn't tell Coach Barksdale that I paced the floor chewing my fingernails when they played that championship game. And I got to know Bane Charette really well after that. He did some real estate appraisals, and so very humble man. And he didn't even want to talk about it. He said that was fun days, and that's like it. A very, very good person. Got to know him. He's a very good person.
It was a pleasure to work with and talk to. Glad you came, and we'll get you back. And anyone else out there would like to be on our show, just you can email me at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'd be glad to have you. And remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. Until next time, God bless you.